Carrie Lynn Carrington, opening up this hour of the jazz scene on Kansas Public Radio, changing the tune, the Women's Jazz Festival, 1978 through 1985, really made a difference in jazz music. There's a lot of women now accepted in jazz, but at the time, women were something of an oddity in jazz music, at least those who played instruments like Terry Lynn Carrington. Terry Lynn Carrington, of course, teaches at Berklee College of Music, and the band Jazz Soul 7, led by her, the song we heard, It's All Right, on Kansas Public Radio. My special guest this afternoon is Carolyn Glenn Brewer. Welcome, Carolyn. You come from a musical family. Tell me about that.
Well, both sides of my family of origin were musical. My father played jazz piano, and my mother was from a family of classical musicians. So my brother and I kind of came by it naturally. We heard both growing up all the time. My brother is a jazz trombonist, Dave Glenn, who lives in Walla Walla, Washington, but he lived in New York for a long time and toured with Jerry Mulligan and Lou Rawls. He did a tour with Diana Ross and a number of other bands. So he represented the jazz part of the family, and I'm actually an orchestral clarinetist. So we kind of came away from our childhood with both sides of that musical heritage. I'm married to Tim Brewer, bass player in town, who plays both jazz and classical, so that's nice. And our children all play instruments. John Brewer is my stepson, but he's a piano player, and he plays in town quite a bit. Our daughter Laura is a pianist, guitarist, plays saxophone. She lives in the San Francisco area, and she's also a singer. And then our son Peter lives in Denton, Texas, and he's a trumpet player. He also has his own recording studio and, as a day gig, works at a company that develops audiovisual equipment. So, yeah, music has always been a big part of our family, and we do try to play together whenever we can.
Well, Carolyn, that's incredible. I had no idea that both sides of your family were musical, and then your married family is musical. Do you have any kids or relatives that have said, I'm not going to do music, I'm going to be the rebel of the family?
I do have one granddaughter who just finished the fifth grade, who said, I'm not going to play an instrument. But I was just out there a couple of weeks ago, and she was asking me a lot of questions about the clarinet, and has kind of changed her mind. So they come around eventually. Her sister is a cellist. And then her mother, I didn't mention, she played piano too.
It's fascinating. You've only written two books other than this one, both of those about the Ruskin Heights tornado, and now a music book, and about a very important subject, the Women's Jazz Festival in Kansas City. And did you go to the Women's Jazz Festival? Is that why you wrote the book, or did you just do a lot of research on it?
Well, the whole thing came about because I was working on an article for Jam Magazine about the Kansas City Jazz Incorporated festivals. And one of the people that I interviewed for that was Carol Comer. And she said, well, why don't you do something on the Women's Jazz Festival? And I had kind of forgotten about that festival, admittedly. And so I started interviewing her and Diane Gregg about that. There was no way you could contain that gigantic subject in an 8-page article. So I decided to just keep going with the research and turn it into a book.
Let's listen as we continue the jazz scene to some music. This one comes from Carol Comer, one of the founders of the Women's Jazz Festival. Carol performing with pianist Russ Long, and a rare recording recorded at Soundtrack in Kansas City by Ron Ubel. It's Kansas Public Radio on a Saturday afternoon, Women in Jazz, and Carolyn Glenn Brewer, my guest.
We both are lost and alone in this world. Walk with me in the gentle rain. Don't be afraid, I've a hand for your hand, and I will be your love for a while. I feel your tears as they fall on my cheek, they are warm like the gentle rain. Come, little one, you have me in this world, and our love will be sweet for a while. Very, very sweet, like the gentle rain. Like the gentle rain. I feel your tears as they fall on my cheeks. They are warm, they are warm, like the gentle rain. Come, little one, you have me in this world, and our love will be sweet for a while. Very, very sweet, like the gentle rain, like the gentle rain, gentle rain, gentle rain, gentle rain, gentle rain.
two in a row, one from Carol Comer. Then we followed that with Toshiko Akiyoshi and the big band recording Dizzy Gillespie's Bebop. And that's a band that performed at the Women's Jazz Festival in Kansas City in the late 1970s, 78, 79 through, I believe it's 1984. Is that correct, Carolyn?
The last official Kansas City Women's Jazz Festival was 1985, although Carol and Diane's participation in it ended after 83, 84. They didn't have one, except for the student band portion of it, plus the scholarship. Every year they gave out a scholarship to college-age students, and in 1984, which was the last time they did that, interestingly enough, the winner was Diana Krall.
Wow, that's amazing. What happened during this festival is a lot of people of merit, of huge merit, name folks like Mary McPartland, and then there was also Mary Lou Williams, who did a sacred concert here in Kansas City, and of course Leonard Feather, who gave an award to the organization for their hard work. There are others who've tried to do women's events and women's festivals, but Carol and Diane got the job done.
Yes, and the thing that's absolutely remarkable to me is that this whole festival came about because of a conversation, just a casual conversation between Carol and Diane as they were driving home from the Wichita Jazz Festival in 1977. And their story is, by the time they paid their Kansas Turnpike toll, they had pretty much talked themselves into trying this themselves. So that's about how much preparation. They called Mary McPartland the next day because Diane had three jazz radio shows at the time, and she had recently interviewed Marion, and she thought, well, if this isn't a crazy idea, Marion will tell us. So she called Marion, and Marion said, why didn't I think of that? And that kind of got the ball rolling. She said she would talk to Leonard Feather on the West Coast, and she would talk to people on the East Coast and get it started. But the fact that it was just this casual conversation that started it, rather than the mayor's task force on the arts or the Chamber of Commerce trying to start something that would bring in more revenue to the city, or even a music school trying to promote its program. It was just two women with a great idea.
Let's listen to the music. Violinist Jenny Scheinemann. Here she is with Jason Moran and Bill Frisell. Jenny Scheinemann on Kansas Public Radio on a Saturday afternoon. Women in Jazz.
Thank you.
Women in Jazz this afternoon on Kansas Public Radio. And I must mention the book from Carolyn Glenn Brewer, and it's Changing the Tune, the Kansas City Women's Jazz Festival from 1978 to 1985. Carolyn, thanks for joining me today. And, you know, it's coming up this coming Thursday night. Carolyn will be speaking at the American Jazz Museum, signing the books and allowing you to take a book home with you. That's at 5:30, 6 o'clock, I think.
The public reception starts at 6, and the actual talk starts at 6:30, and book signing will be about 7:30.
That's wonderful. Are you excited about that?
Yes, this will be a great opportunity to kind of blend this history with the Jazz Museum setting. I'm really excited to kind of have that all happen there together.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And this book is produced by North Texas State, is that right? Is that the publisher?
Yes, University of North Texas Press.
So tell me about the sacred concert from Mary Lou Williams. And Mary Lou Williams, of course, an icon of Kansas City music and a pianist of great merit that actually started playing in Pittsburgh when she was six, seven years old. By the time she was 9, she performed with the Pittsburgh Symphony and came to Kansas City in her teens, ended up writing a bunch of music that became very important in the 1930s, and then moving to New York and helping many musicians in their careers, turning to sacred music later in her life. And her and Mary McPartland, they kind of had a little bit of a rift, right?
Yes. Yes, they weren't always on the same page musically, I guess is a nice way of putting it. But this mass that Mary Lou did, actually she did 3 Catholic masses. The first festival happened to fall on Palm Sunday, so because they already had Mary Lou Williams booked as the headliner, actually, they had negotiated with her to also have this mass performed, a fitting tribute to her mass and to the people of Kansas City. So Mary Lou said absolutely, because Kansas City was such a special place for her that she wanted that to happen. So that was on the Sunday afternoon before the main concert Sunday evening.
Carolyn, it's a pleasure to have you with me this afternoon. And coming up this Thursday, Carolyn will be at the American Jazz Museum starting around 6 p.m. and a talk about her book, Changing the Tune, which is about the Women's Jazz Festival, the first Women's Jazz Festival in the world here in Kansas City. And you can find out more at the AmericanJazzMuseum.org. Here's the music on Kansas Public Radio.
I don't believe in fretting or grieving. Why mess around with strife? Never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life. Some find it pleasant dining on pheasant. Those things roll off my knife. Give me tomatoes and mashed potatoes. I like the simple life. Cottage small is all I'm after. Not one that's spacious and wide. House full of joy and laughter. While I dig inside, you take the high road, I'll take the low road. Far from the care and strife. Sounds corny and seedy, but yes, indeed, I had like the simple life. Not one that's spacious and wide. House full of joy and laughter. One I love inside. You take the high road, I'll take the low road. Far from the care and strife. Sounds corny and seedy, but yes indeedy. Corny and seedy, yes indeedy. Corny and seedy, yes indeedy. Give me the simple life.
Carol Comer on the vocals and the wonderful Russ Long playing the piano. What a duo that is. The Simple Life, indeed, on Kansas Public Radio. Support for the Jazz Scene on KPR comes from Laird Nollard Hyundai of Lawrence with a wide selection of new Hyundais, including the redesigned Hyundai Tucson Compact Crossover. Laird Nollard Hyundai, 27th in Iowa, and online at hyundaioflawrence.com. And by Visit Topeka. You know, the capital city has attractions, history, family fun. Information about Topeka's events and festivals is at visittopeka.com. I will speak more with Carolyn Glenn Brewer in just a few moments, this time about Melba Liston, who was part of the Kansas City Women's Jazz Festival in the late 70s and early 80s. Stay tuned, won't you? We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, where 91.5 in Lawrence and 89.7 in Emporia. KPR smartphone app allows you to listen to KPR's live stream and shows on demand, all right on your phone. You can also browse the program schedule and search for individual stories, too. Works on both Apple and Android platforms. For more information, visit kpr.ku.edu or your app store. Carol and Glenn Brewer with me this afternoon, and I want to ask you about Melba Liston. Melba Liston, a great trombonist, wonderful arranger, and someone who really, she fit in well with men working in jazz. I mean, she was like, she would write the arrangements and be in the band and hang out, and she just had a good attitude about what she was doing with the music, and didn't let the prejudice get her down in music, right?
Yes, I think for the most part she was one of those people that didn't really have a choice. She knew that she was always going to be involved in music from the very beginning, even as a child. She said she walked past a music store with her grandfather when she was about, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and saw a trombone standing in the window and thought it was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen in her life, and just wouldn't leave her grandfather alone until he bought this trombone for her. And then they sat out on their back porch and she would just fiddle around with it until she could make a tune. So from the beginning, she was totally drawn to that. She was one of the people who I most enjoyed finding out more about, because I knew who she was, and I'd heard some of her playing with the Dizzy Gillespie Orchestra, but I didn't really know much about her personal life. So it was really interesting to find out she studied with Gerald Wilson. And one of the things to really remember about this time is that jazz education, the way we know it today, pretty much didn't exist. Most schools didn't have jazz programs, and even through the 70s, there weren't a whole lot of colleges where you could get a jazz degree. So all of these people who played at the festival in the late 70s and early 80s mainly learned just by being around other people who were playing. And Melba was certainly one of those people. She early on was working in a band that played at the movie theaters, and she would pick the brains of everybody she played with there. She just really absorbed everything that she could get her hands on. And I think at one point I read something about her mother even being upset that she'd never come out of her room except for meals, because she was always in there either practicing or writing. She really was attracted to writing and arranging right from the beginning, too. So she had quite a career on the road with a lot of different people, particularly Dizzy Gillespie. She did a tour with Billie Holiday, and it was in the South, and there were problems with concerts got canceled, their transportation kind of fell through, and she said she just remembered eating a lot of oatmeal for a few days, and then she went back to L.A. and said, that's it, I can't live on the road anymore. So she got a job in an office and, you know, did the whole thing that so many people do where they feel like music has almost betrayed them because they couldn't make a living at it. She even was an extra on some movies. There's some biblical movie where she's in the background playing the lyre or something, you know, just because she was so statuesque and had such a great presence that, you know, she looked good on screen too. But she said those Hollywood people are crazy, so she didn't want to do that for very long, and then she went back to playing. But she had moved to Jamaica and was actually teaching down there and had no intention of coming back to play when Carol and Diane decided that they wanted to bring her back. So they spent about a year trying to coax her to come back to this festival. And she was born in Kansas City, Kansas, so that was part of the draw for her, too, was to come back here.
Carol and Glenn Brewer speaking about Melba Liston, who was mentored by Gerald Wilson, Dizzy Gillespie, and Randy Weston. And she's many recordings with Randy Weston and many with Dizzy Gillespie. And I remember Gerald Wilson being on the jazz scene and telling a story about going broke with Billie Holiday on the road, ending up in Kansas City, and having to have money wired to him to, you know, to get back to New York City. You know, jazz is not easy, and you come from the music is not easy, and you come from a family of musicians on both sides of your biological family, and then your married family with the Brewers, Tim and John and all the others. It's amazing to be able to make it in music, and making it in music is it's a little bit different standard than making it as something else, a doctor, a lawyer, or somebody in those sort of trades. Can you speak a little bit about that, Carolyn?
Oh, wow. Well, yes, I do come from a long line of musicians, but not too many of them actually made their total living with music, my brother being the exception. My father was a jazz piano player, but he was also, he worked at Yellow Freight. John works at, he's also a music liturgist at a church. My husband Tim is also a dentist. Our son Peter, who plays the trumpet and has a master's in jazz arranging and composition, also during the day works at an audiovisual research company. Oh, I'm a grade school and junior high band director.
And a writer.
Yes.
What you're saying is don't give up your day, right?
Yes, but also don't give up your music, because right. That's your soul. And then, you know, in many cases, having these other jobs has allowed us to be able to pursue the types of music that we wanted to play and to study, and not necessarily have to spend time on things that we didn't want to play or study. It's kind of the best of both worlds. It would be nice to have more time, but, you know, everybody feels that way about pretty much all jobs, really.
Yeah, that's true. Carolyn Glenn Brewer, and a wonderful story and a beautiful book, Changing the Tune. She will be celebrated at the American Jazz Museum this coming Thursday at 6 p.m., Join Carolyn at the American Jazz Museum to purchase the book and to find out more about Changing the Tune, the story of the Women's Jazz Festival, the first Women's Jazz Festival here in Kansas City, and Carol Comer and Diane Gregg. This is just more music. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed this.
Jenny Scheinemann with Jason Moran and Bill Frisell, and music from Crossing the Field, innovative music from a few years back, and the song we heard, That's Delight. Support for the Jazz Scene on Kansas Public Radio comes from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville, Arkansas, presenting the innovative glass, paint, and neon works of Dale Chihuly in the gallery and in the forest, on display through August 14th. Information available at crystalbridges.org. A British release from Room Spin Records. Alan Broadbent at the piano, Georgia Manzio doing the vocals, and the two of them writing the songs. This particular number called Someone's Son, S-O-N, and Room Spin Records with the songbook.
Someone's son, someone's rain. You will see that someone's joy is someone else's pain. What you find, so you lose. Hearts will break and bones will ache and skin will bruise. Some will fight, some will stray. Some believe in what they see while other people pray. Some survive, some are lost. Some will fly while someone else will pay the cost. The more we learn, the less we know. We try so hard to chase the sun, but find the snow. We build things up, then knock them down. And history shows us that the world still goes around. Someone's low, someone's peak. You will learn that someone's strong is someone else's weak. Someone's friend, someone's foe. Some will claw. Some will toy, some deploy, and some destroy. Some will shun the burning sun, and some enjoy. The more we learn, the less we know. We try so hard to chase the sun, but find the snow. We build things up, then knock them down. And history shows us that the world still goes around. Someone's low, someone's peak. You will learn that someone strong is someone else's weak. Someone's foe. Some will cloy and some will toy. Some destroy and some deploy. Some endear, some domineer. Some revere and some will cheer. Some go here, some bite your ear. And some steer clear, some persevere. Some will fear the searing sun. And some will
Stardate, June 24th. Stars come in all types. One of the most common types is the orange dwarf, which is also one of the hardest to see. Orange dwarfs are somewhat smaller and cooler than the sun, and they're not quite as bright, which is why so few are visible to the unaided eye. Tonight, though, you can see not one, not two, but three orange dwarfs all at once. This triple star is known as 36 Ophiuchi. It's just 19 light-years from Earth. Its two brightest stars each emit about a quarter as much visible light as the Sun does. The two stars orbit each other every 500 years on a highly elongated path. Yet another orange star stands a good distance away from these two, giving 36 Ophiuchi a grand total of three orange dwarf stars. Such stars account for about 10% of all the stars in the galaxy. They're so faint, though, that none is prominent in the night sky. Fortunately, because 36 Ophiuchi is so close, it's one of the few orange dwarfs you can see without binoculars or a telescope. You will, however, need a star chart and a good dark moonless night like tonight, away from city lights. 36 Ophiuchi is quite low in the south-southeast at nightfall and due south around midnight, not far to the lower right of the bright planet Saturn. And if you can't get away from the city, binoculars will bring the system into view. A triple orange dwarf that's among our nearest neighboring stars. You can follow Stardate on Facebook, Twitter, and on our website, stardate.org. For the MacDonald Observatory, I'm Sandy Wood.
Support for Stardate here on Kansas Public Radio comes from the National World War I Museum and Memorial, featuring the exhibition Vive l'Amérique. French children welcome their American ally, showcasing drawings created by French children in 1917. Details at theworldwar.org. We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, 91.5, KANH, KANH HD1 Emporia, 89.7, KANV, KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City at 91.3, KANQ Chanute at 90.3, and on the web at kpr.ku.edu. Support for All Things Considered here on Kansas Public Radio comes from Independence, Inc., providing general public transportation throughout Douglas County and transportation to medical appointments in Topeka, Kansas City, and Leavenworth. Details at independenceinc.org. All Things Considered Saturday up next. It's 4 o'clock.